Good morning. Yesterday morning, I was very privileged to be asked to say a mass for the Carmelites in Lafayette, but also for a pilgrim group that was starting a day-long pilgrimage there for the Jubilee pilgrimage. And as I was preparing my homily for them, as I was walking to the church, the reality of this theme of pilgrimage really kind of struck me, and I realized I hadn't thought about it as much as I should lately, especially in connection with the feast today. So I want to use that lens to look at the Eucharist, because the idea of pilgrimage is deeply connected to the Eucharist, and it's connected through the manna in the desert. Because as God was leading his people to the promised land, he gave them bread from heaven. And we even call the Eucharist, the last Eucharist we receive, Viaticum, which means with you on the way, right? Or in a slightly looser translation, if you're familiar with this program in Lafayette, food for the journey, right? Food for the journey. That's what the Eucharist is. And so I think it's weird we celebrate the Eucharist right now, but as a special feast, it's a little weird, but I think it's important. I think it's a good time. So you may recall last weekend, I talked about how last weekend Trinity Sunday was kind of the trailer hitch, a pivot of the entire liturgical year, that we had gone from Advent through Pentecost with the Lord's mysteries of salvation, and then we'd have this long stretch of ordinary time until we celebrate Christ the King. And that Trinity Sunday was kind of that last special Sunday. It is the last special Sunday. Today is not supposed to be a Sunday, but that's fine. Okay. Fine. Actually, Corpus Christi is celebrated on a Thursday, but everyone in the world, except like the Vatican, throws it onto Sunday. But the logic of the church's year is still there. There's no special Sundays, theoretically, between Trinity Sunday and Christ the King. But it's good that we celebrate the Eucharist now. And in order to explain that, I'm going to need to layer some symbols right on top of each other. And to do that, I'm going to use the PowerPoint of my hands. Can you see how beautiful my hands are? They are wondrous hands. And so I need you to follow my hands as I do this wonderful dance to spell all this out. So we hear today in the second reading, on the night before he died, Jesus instituted the Eucharist. Yes. Deliberately, Holy Thursday night is the beginning of Passover, the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In the Old Testament, in the time of Exodus, Moses instituted the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So we're going to do this. We're going to journey together here, okay? So Jesus does the Last Supper, institutes the Eucharist. Moses institutes the Passover. The next day is the true Passover day, right? So after that feast, the angel goes through Egypt and slaughters the firstborn son, and on Good Friday, God's firstborn son dies. And St. John is very clear that it is a deliberate Passover feast. Okay. If you go and look at the older tradition, the time when Jesus was around, not what you'll find on the internet today, but if you go look what people at Jesus' time were actually saying, the crossing of the Red Sea was 3 days after Passover. And so it corresponds to Easter, right? That the miraculous opening of the gates so the people of God could escape, and then the pursuing demons were crushed by the sea, right? This is very clearly Easter. We read that passage of the Easter Vigil. It's very deeply rooted. So you have Passover supper, Passover event, crossing the Red Sea, and Easter. Then they go into the desert. Jesus is risen, he ascends. Moses ascends up Mount Sinai and receives the law. And what day did he give the law to the Jewish people according to Jewish tradition? Pentecost. Pentecost was a Jewish feast before it was a Christian one. And just as the pillar of fire came down and gave Moses the law, so now the tongues of fire come down on the apostles and give them the law in their heart to go proclaim to all the world. You got all that? Then the Jewish people go into the desert, and they have nothing to eat. So God rains down manna from heaven. And here we are, 2 weeks out from Pentecost, celebrating the Most Holy Eucharist. And so I do think that it lines up. I do think that the church is being deliberate with this. I do think that we're meant to recall the manna in the desert, because the manna in the desert is a pilgrim food, only a pilgrim food. They ate manna in the desert until they crossed the Jordan River. When they got home, when they got into the Promised Land, as soon as they got into Israel, the manna stopped. And for us, as soon as we get to heaven, the Eucharist stops, because we no longer see him under a veil. We see him as he is. And so let's look at that idea of nourishment first, that idea of nourishment for the journey, that idea that God is feeding us now as we wander in the desert for half the liturgical year, as we're trying to make a pilgrim journey home to heaven. Let's look at that idea of nourishment, because he does nourish us with the Eucharist. And I want to be very clear that he gives us himself to eat, not a part of himself, his entire self. Body, blood, soul, and divinity. I don't know what to say so that I can shatter the familiarity of this, but I need you to understand that every single time this idiot says Mass, he says a few words and holds God himself in his hands. The creator of the universe. This is not a metaphor, it's not a symbol, it's not an exaggeration, it's not wordplay. And the one you receive in your hands or on your tongue is God himself. And we don't know what to do with that. We don't know what to do with that. I think the reason so many Catholics just kind of shrug off Mass is because they don't know what to do with that. Like, how do you deal with that reality? It's insane. It's insane. And so we just think that because it happens a lot, it can't be that big a deal. It is that big of a deal. Once a week, at least, you eat God. It's that big of a deal. And I get it. If you look at the other six sacraments, they happen rarely. I mean, you know, confession happens fairly regularly, but it's still not as often as communion. But the other side is baptism, confirmation. Those are once-in-a-lifetime things. Marriage, maybe twice if your spouse dies. Ordination, once. They build on each other, but once. You know, anointing of the sick, maybe a few times if you get deathly ill several times, but it's not something that's happening every day. The Eucharist is offered to us every day. That's insane! Like, the lesser sacraments happen less frequently. God giving us himself to eat, that's offered every day. And certainly every Sunday. I don't want to say that's insane one more time, but you need to understand that that's crazy. And we need to squirm with it. We need to squirm with it. The hugeness of it. To realize that the church is not exaggerating, Father Sensat's not just having, you know, an eloquent day. The reality, the fact of this mystery should floor us. That he feeds us with himself as we wander in the desert. Exactly as he gave us himself on the cross. How will we answer for that? The last, I don't know how I'm going to answer for it. For all the Masses that I said when I was 90% out of it, because, you know, that happens, you've seen it. For all the times that I've received communion distracted or with my mind elsewhere. For all the times that I haven't approached the altar with due reverence, how am I going to answer for that when I see him? How are you going to answer for it? It's him. And thank God he's merciful. The second part of this that I want to say is that he gives us food tailored to our taste. And I need to be tailored to our needs, really. I need to be clear about this. You know, if you live for 40 years on bread falling from the sky, you probably get bored with it. But the reality is, the Book of Wisdom says, the manna changed itself to suit each one's tastes. Whatever you were craving that day, that's what the manna tasted like, according to Scripture. And the Eucharist, Jesus himself, does the same. He is the same God, it is the same sacrament. But if you think he gives you the same thing on your first communion as on your last communion, or as in the communions in between, that's wrong. He's the greatest nutritionist. He tailors his feast to what you need. If you were joyful that day, he supports your joy. If you were sorrowing, he eases your sorrow. If you're struggling, he gives you strength in temptation. If you're, you know, a little bit too big for your britches, he pops your bubble. The reality is, he always gives us what we need. This is not an all-you-can-eat buffet with everything tasting more or less the same, but just looking different. This is a food tailored to each one's need. And that special thing. So the first I want to be the enormity of the gift. But second, I want to point out the delicacy of the gift. That he gives us what we need every time we come to communion. Third, I want to be clear that this is pilgrim food. It's not sit in your recliner and order DoorDash food. Jesus feeds people in the Gospel of Luke today because they were on a journey to come hear him. The prophet Elijah, the prophet Elisha, they both worked miracles to support their journey to God. Obviously, the manna in the desert was about supporting them as they moved to the Holy Land. Every time we receive communion, we're nourished a particular way, but we're nourished for a particular reason, which is to get up and keep moving. The Eucharist spurs us on. Keep on fighting. Keep on growing. Keep on walking. Keep on making a journey to heaven. And the Eucharist does lead us to heaven. It's insane. I'm sorry, I said it again. Okay. I don't know what else to say. The Eucharist leads us to heaven because the Eucharist, he is heaven. He's just under a veil right now. Same God as we'll see in heaven. The communion will be different because the veil will be removed and we'll see him face to face and we'll have an immediate union with him. It's the same God. And this should really click in when you realize the things that prevent you from receiving communion are the exact same things that prevent you from going to heaven. Unconfessed, unrepented mortal sin means you can't receive communion. Unconfessed, unrepented mortal sin means you can't go to heaven. This is the same thing. Same God. Same union. Different mode in heaven. But same thing. And that should make us shiver too. That should make us shiver too. We are, in this moment, right now, about to receive the same one that the angels and the saints rejoice in for eternity. What kind of people then should we be? What kind of dedication to transformation, to conversion, to growth then should we have? Jesus does not give us himself so that we can pat ourselves on the back and say how wonderful we are, I'm okay and you're okay. He calls us to move. Like my phone, right? He's like, you have to do at least 5,000 steps today, Father sends that. And I'm like, shut up. All right, but the reality is, like, he calls us to move. Calls us to move. And so as we come to receive him today, I want you to try to get in that mindset. To realize that though we see this every weekend, maybe even every day, the universe is about to be ripped asunder because God himself is going to visit Erath. That you're about to eat God himself, that he gives himself completely to you, body, blood, soul, and divinity, as nourishment and as tailored nourishment for your needs, and that he does so that we can continue the journey to keep on walking until we get to the place where we see him face to face and every veil falls. God bless you all.